Greetings, and welcome to Odiostoa 10. This week's reading is taken from Epictetus' Discourses and is Chapter 10, Book 1 of Epictetus' Discourses, entitled, Against Those Who Eagerly Seek Preferment at Rome. This discourse essentially talks about three related things. The first is that for Epictetus public in Rome, to have an active life would have meant to be actively engaged in the political life of Rome. And Epictetus wants to raise the question. It's important to understand that Epictetus is not against political involvement itself. The Stoics, as a rule, were very involved in the politics of their day. The question is rather to ask about certain things that political activity implies, which is to be constantly busy with the process of going about those who are in positions of power higher than ours to request favors from them so that our own projects could evolve further. And Epictetus wants to contrast that employment of time with that of the philosopher and say, look, it's not because we are not walking around busying ourselves with these trifling matters that we are inactive. So that's one thing that this course is about. The other thing is, and that's solely contained in the first sentence of this chapter, which remains one of my favorite sentences of the whole Epictetian corpus, which is to say, look, it's not because we are pursuing lofty things that, you know, we always ought to be lofty about it. We ought to be active and we ought to be serious about the philosophical enterprise and really not lay around and do it. So that's the second thing which this discourse accomplishes. The third thing, which is really funny to me, is that, I mean, usually when we talk about the importance of examples in the development of morals, I mean, the natural thing to think is that it's the responsibility of elders to give a good example for the younger generations. But in this case, Epictetus wants to say that because, probably because, you know, as one gets older, one might maybe get softer and prone to laziness and prone to have one's attention diverted to other projects. Epictetus wants to say, no, it's the responsibility of the younger, those who do have the energy and the drive to philosophize, to lead the way so that we, who are old and weak, might not be tempted to follow them in leisure and amusement, you know, if that's all the younger people did. So these three separate things are what makes this this discourse of interest to me, and I hope that you will likewise enjoy it. against those who eagerly seek preferment at Rome. If we applied ourselves as busily to our own work as the old men at Rome do to those matters about which they are employed, perhaps we also might accomplish something. I am acquainted with a man older than myself, who is now superintendent of corn at Rome. And remember the time when he came here on his way back from exile, and what he said as he related the events of his former life, and how he declared that with respect to the future, after his return, he would look after nothing else than passing the rest of his life in quiet and tranquility. "For how little of life," he said, "remains for me." I replied, "You will not do it, but as soon as you smell Rome, you will forget all that you have said. And if admission is allowed, even into the imperial palace, you will gladly thrust yourself in and thank God." "If you find me, Epictetus," he answered, "setting even one foot within the palace, think what you please." Well, what then did he do? Before he entered the city, he was met by letters from Caesar, and as soon as he received them, he forgot all. And ever after has added one piece of business to another. I wish that I were now by his side to remind him of what he said when he was passing this way, and to tell him how much better a seer I am than he is. Well then, do I say that man is an animal made for doing nothing? Certainly not. But why are we not active? For example, as to myself, as soon as day comes, in a few words, I remind myself of what I must read over to my pupils. Then forthwith I say to myself, "But what it is to me how a certain person shall read? The first thing for me is to sleep." And indeed, what resemblance is there between what other people do and what we do? If you observe what they do, you will understand. And what else do they do all day long than make up accounts, inquire among themselves, give and take advice about some small quantity of grain, a bit of land, and such kind of profits? Is it then the same thing to receive a petition and to read in it, "I entreat you to permit me to export a small quantity of corn," and one to this effect, "I entreat you to learn from Chrysippus what is the administration of the world and what place in it the rational animal holds. Consider also who you are and what is the nature of your good and bad." Are these things like the other? Do they require equal care? And is it equally base to neglect these and those? Well then, are we the only persons who are lazy and love sleep? No, but much rather you young men are. For we old men, when we see young men amusing themselves, are eager to play with them. And if I saw you active and zealous, much more should I be eager myself to join you in your serious pursuits. would like to go a bit out of the ordinary today and conclude this program with an anecdote. This morning I was walking by the university campus where I study, and I noticed that there was a blood drive going on, so I went in there to donate my blood. And afterwards, when you're done, they have you sit and wait a little bit just to make sure that you don't collapse on the way out. And this nurse started talking to me, and among these things which nurses usually ask you in that kind of setting, was one of the things she asked, which was, what do you study? And so I told her that I study ancient philosophy, Greek and Latin philosophy. And her eyes lit up, and she told me, do you study Seneca? I said, well, yes, among other things. And she started explaining to me like that out of the blue that at one point in her life she was going through a really difficult moment, and she visited a psychiatrist, and instead of giving her medication, the psychiatrist had told her, I mean, amongst other things, of course, but to go by and read Seneca on the tranquility of the soul. And she told me that she had read it, and that it had really, really made a difference in her life, and that afterwards she had, I mean, almost entirely devoured the Stoic corpus. She was familiar with the letters to Lucilius of Seneca, and she had read Marcus Aurelius and some Epictetus as well. And I just thought it was a wonderful thing to see that it's still possible nowadays to turn towards the past, towards these beautiful texts, and being able to find there lessons which find meaning and application in one's daily lives. And, you know, which I mean, we philosophy is also good for other things, but if it's good for anything in particular, it is that, at least. At any rate, this was Audio Stoa 10. Please come back next week for our reading, which will be from chapter 11, book 1 of the Discourses, entitled Of Natural Affection. The readings are taken from George Long's translation in the public domain, which is easily available on the internet. You can reach us online on our website at audiostoa.blogsite.org, or you can send me a comment directly by email at audiostoa@gmail.com.